And greetings from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exists in the original form. You're tuned in to The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and all that nasty selfishness went wrong, and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of personal revival, aimed at making each one of us more responsible, more cooperative, and more aware of the spiritual bonds that connect us no matter what we find to disagree about in the interim. Now, you can call from the U.S. to 877-876-5227. You can call from Canada to 888-810-8322. Or you can call us direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and you may also be able to get it on the air in your local area to find out if one of those old-fashioned on-the-air stations in your area carries this show. Just contact us at bbsradio.com. The website for the show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at spiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All past shows become available as soon as it is humanly or even extra-humanly possible on the station archives. And for information about things that you find on this show, you can go to offthegridstofreedom.blogspot.com or just email me. Now, my blog is titled How the Neocons Stole Freedom and is conveniently located at howtheneoconsstolefreedom.blogspot.com. The story last week, still on the top, is titled How the Secrets of the Exodus Will Save America. Our guest last week, Augustus Franklin, is also our guest today, but on a completely different subject, through the strange connections that life forges, all subjects really do connect. Or, as Augustus would say, the folders talk to each other. I'm going to let you wonder about that for a moment. The article I am now writing, which will be up before Monday, will connect more dots than you could have possibly imagined. Check it out and put yourself on the mailing list. Now, last week, Ron Paul introduced his new agenda, a bill now in Congress titled the American Freedom Agenda Act. You can go to nearly any Ron Paul site and find out about that, which you should. And then you should begin hammering your own Congress critters, though you should not be surprised when this does not seem to move them off the dime. To become a Congress critter, you need to have an owner who can keep you in line, with those rare exceptions like Ron, who are simply so well known in their districts that they elicit support on the basis of those strange things like trust and good character. Those could be counted on the fingers of one hand. So, Lake Jackson, Texas, you are truly blessed to have had Ron there for you. You can depend on Ron to do the right thing with courage. More liberals and conservatives are signing on and endorsing that bill every single day. Americans are beginning to fight back. The Ron Paul campaign is reformatting American politics, but there are still a few things we need. One of those is a means for gauging how big the movement really is. And that means something like a count-off or a census of the Ron Paul supporters and the money they're using on the real campaign, that campaign that comes straight from the minds and hearts of ordinary Americans. Last week, we announced that you can now get a free Ron Paul email address at voteforronpaul.net. And the owner of the site, Greg Slaughter, reported today that he is busier than a one-armed paper hanger getting people set up. So if you have some time and can help out, get in touch with Greg. He could use the help. And his email is greg@ticketslayer.com. Also, you can participate in just that, a count-off, a census of supporters at voteforronpaul.net. The results of the census will be used to show the real depth, breadth, and weight of the Ron Paul Revolution. And that's the message those invested in the status quo need to hear. And now, a little update from South Carolina's Chris Lawton. Grand opening of the Greenville headquarters will take place at 4 p.m. Thursday, November 1st. And on Friday at 1 p.m., they will have Ron Paul at the Clemson University Strom Thurmond Center speaking. Extra credit to those in the classes there. And so that's kind of exciting when the professors start to believe in the whole thing. Saturday morning, there'll be a grand opening for the Columbia, South Carolina office. And as of that date, there will be three offices with paid staff in South Carolina for Ron Paul. A lot's happening there. And a lot needs to happen because South Carolina is an early state for the primaries, as most of you already know. And now, a note on one tiny little part of the opposition. The apples and oranges effect, with libertarians engaging in downward spiral, linear thinking, how little has changed, hit when today Shane Corey, a functionary for the LP, decided that it would be a swell idea to defend Paul Jacobs. This is clearly not something they have thought through and that needs to be changed. It will, rest assured. The idea that made freedom the cause of the Taft-Goldwater revolutions led the next generation to found the Libertarian Party. It's sad when the principle of party destroys the party of principle, but it's only to be expected when those in charge have their salaries on the line. With the present move toward extending federal control into thought crimes, we all need to start thinking about who the enemy really is. But the military continues to speak in cash, which is a currency that means something still in our society, because our service people donated more to Ron Paul, again, in the third quarter than any other candidate. Paul received $40,000, almost twice as much as John McCain and Fred Thompson. And now some thoughts for the week ahead. As we live through this time of change for all, trauma for many, each of us has in our hands the opportunity to confront our own fears and inner conflicts, reshaping that internal framing in which we all live. You do that whether or not you know it. You live in a frame of reality that limits what you believe, what you think, and therefore what is possible for you. The revolution now in motion is changing the entire frame of human existence. Are you ready for that? When it is over, we will see ourselves differently, and we will understand in very different terms that relationship we have with each other. Perception never alters reality, but faulty perception, perception that ignores reality, can take you over a cliff into errors that kill. We are all of us connected to each other, and that's not rhetoric, that's reality. When you accept that the fears leave you as if carried away in the wind along with the noise of fear, the focus on things that cannot endure or matter, like your SUV, a vacation on the Bahamas, or your latest electronic status symbol, just seem to dissipate. In that moment, you become aware of the place internal that speaks the truth, that you are never really alone. And that's a wonderful place to be. It is the hunger to find that place in time that forged the movement now taking us from a place of slavery and servitude and forced dependence on rulers and ignorance to a place of self-actualizing knowledge and individual freedom. When you feel your connection to others, you love them. America is the vision that brings that all together. Today we're going to talk about one of the roadblocks now being planned by the people of the grid, intended to turn our lives into money in their bank accounts. That's not a loving thing to do to anyone. And the best thing we can do to them is stop them from achieving their goal. Their plans have included the use of the tools intended to enact freedom and individual power, such as privatization, converting that formerly honorable turn to nothing less than corporatization. It's sad, but it is something we all need to accept and understand. The land on which we live, the water we drink, the air we breathe, all of these are presently being corporatized through the use of the same kinds of ugly tools that were sold to us as a means for ensuring justice and freedom. If you knew the hopefulness of the time when we believed that those tools really were intended to create freedom, you would understand the pain more of us every day feel. And seeing how they have been used to steal the life and heart from individuals across the world. Those tools held the potential for restoring the earth, and now they're destroying the essential humanity of those who are being victimized, as well as those who are allowing themselves to be seduced by greed. But you need to know so you can understand. Protect yourself and your family, and take corrective action. Here today to tell us about what the people of the grid have planned is Augustus Franklin. Mr. Franklin is an astrophysicist and a scientist of all trades. whose insights will eventually land him a Nobel Prize. When it is awarded, he will have earned it several times over. Please welcome Augustus Franklin. Are you there?
Nice to be here.
Yes, and I can hardly wait until you get that Nobel Prize, because certainly it will be well earned.
As they said in the movie Spider-Man, it's not about the prizes, Harry. It's not about the prizes.
That's right. It's not about the prizes. It's about other things.
That's right.
But now, before we get started, we did something kind of interesting last night, a little bit different. We did a skit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that the engineer is there and hearing me, because this little skit dramatizes exactly what they have planned for us. Isn't that right, Augustus?
I think so. It's not stated clearly, but then a lot of laws are put in place to steer things in a direction that you don't see firsthand.
That is ever, ever so true, isn't it? And this skit is something that dramatizes what we're going to be talking about. It dramatizes the fact that they're taking away, they're going to use, you know, a science as a way to,
well,
you know, to take our land
science
and our property.
They're using phony science. Let's talk about what it really is. Everybody's talking about global warming, but the models don't really show warming incidents that we see in nature. And when you look far enough back behind and beyond the times when Gore and his little crowd have evaluated atmospheric carbon, there was a huge period of carbon sinking in the Middle Ages called the Mini Ice Age. At that point, for nearly 70, 80 years, there was a huge amount of cooling that happened, which, of course, sequesters a large amount of carbon out of the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that has perked up. The sun came back into an active cycle. The temperatures rose, the clouds went away, and the carbon's been released from that sequestering. And so when you talk about what's being seen in our atmosphere, there is indeed a portion of it that is due to people burning stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's a larger portion that's not being explained to everybody as a natural background carbon level that, as it readjusts out of the last ice age, which was a mini one. When you look far enough back, 18,000 years and further back, you'll notice that over the past 400,000 years, there's been four periods of interglacials like this, where for about 20,000 years, surface temperatures on the planet seem to be very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But in between those sections, for around 90,000 years, they're very cold, except at the equator. And then, you know, but at the poles, you get huge glaciations occurring. And one of those glacial periods busted up about 18, 20,000 years ago that we remember as the Great Flood. And things warmed up for a while.
And that's one of the ways that you can see the connections, because here we're talking about the flood, which, of course, is related to what we see in the Bible, which actually has reality, we astonishingly find out.
Well, the Bible's full of facts.
That's true.
Usually the institutions that rewrite the facts to fit the times, but when you go back far enough, the facts are very clear. So what we have here is a situation where another country, Canada, Eastern Canada, Quebec, Canada, is controlling the satellite imagery out of the RadarSat satellites, which every day, two of them, take a picture of every place on Earth.
Yes.
And if they decide to release a report on their official RadarSat tabulations that there is an increase or a decrease in glacial growth or reversal, then you end up with a situation where, well, they can kind of paint any picture they want.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like they are.
Now, let's see if, is the engineer there? Hi. Are you there? Hello?
Hello.
Hi, and we have, he is indeed there, and we are about to have our wonderful little skit. So I hope you all enjoy it. Thanks for listening.
It was a quiet morning in the Office of Carbon Enforcement. The officer of the watch was drinking a cup of coffee. The headlines on his copy of USA Today read, "The Summer of 2022. His attention is taken from a paper to his computer that is chirping that a notification has been received. There has been an unapproved house sale at a local land conservation bank office. He moves the details of the transaction as an attachment to a folder on his desktop marked Immediate Action. Taking his cursor, he clicks on his Google Earth Bank icon and locates the property by the Canadian RadarSat satellite link. After he zooms in on the property, he clicks on the satellite image and another icon pops up, a cute little black footprint. with a green letter C in the center. Clicking on this icon generates another report, which he moves to his immediate action folder. These two reports are attached to an electronic message, and he moves the cursor slowly and deliberately to click on Send. Across town, a black police-like car is parked next to a tower in a station of electric terminals marked Texon No C, with another advertising sign above it, 100% carbon-free fuel from Texon, the sign of the double cross. The driver is charging his nickel hydrogen battery cell. As we pull back from the car, we notice another sign in rainbow letters that reads UNCER, and under it, United Nations Carbon Enforcement Ranger. And on the rear of the car, another sign. We serve to protect the planet. Inside the car, a beeping sound is heard. The ranger finishes and receives the electronic message and downloads the attachments. He starts up his car, starts his green flashing lights, and roars off at high speed. It is midday inside the Sacramento Land Conservation Bank office, a corporate setting overlooking a wintry scene outside. Around a mahogany table are six people and his secretary, taking copies back and forth to a copy machine.
I think you will love our cottage. I will miss it so. But we are moving south, and we have so many wonderful memories of when there were bright sunny days and warm summers.
Well, Grace, my husband's an avid skier, and the new slopes at Placerville Glacier are world class, and only a 10-minute drive.
Apparently everything is in order. We have received nothing from the Office of Enforcement to the contrary. So if you will both sign and provide your fingerprints for the final transaction, we will...
He is interrupted by the entrance of the UNCER agent.
I represent the UNCER, and I'm ordering a halt to this proceeding under UN Code 401, Strong Gore Section, Failure to Pay Carbon Debt.
Sorry, but I have all the seller's paperwork in order here, and it is clear that there is no carbon lien on this property.
Mr. and Mrs. Blumenstein, are you aware that your lack of providing adequate systems for carbon sinking has not been registered, and that until this is filed and verified, that this property is legally in probate?
But, officer, we paid in full our carbon usage tax, and we have filed the income credit forms for the carbon excess that was created when our tenant used the fireplace without permission. Is there a problem? The copies are right here.
But you never installed the carbon converter on your chimney to reduce your footprint. Quite simply, you have, on the one hand, complied with the law and paid your assessment. You've never complied with the law and installed the equipment to reduce your footprint.
Officer, we are too poor to afford to buy them from the UN Carbon Sinking Department of Commerce and Control. My wife almost died recently. I used that money to buy medicine.
That's not my problem, sir, but you have admitted in front of witnesses that you are not in compliance. This transaction is voided and the Department of Homeland Carbon Security will have to take custody of your home and its property for proper disposition and attachment to the World Conservation Bank until further notice. You are under arrest for carbon violation according to the Strong Gore Western Climate Action Initiative dated February 27, 2007. Anything you say now may be used to convict you in a court of carbon law.
Grace follows her handcuffed husband down to the street and watches as he is loaded into the car. As it drives off, she looks at the sign that says, "We serve to protect the planet," and softly begins to weep as she watches her husband taken off into the distance. She wraps her scarf around her face to protect it from the cold summer wind.
And I very much hope that you enjoyed that. I think that was extremely instructive. And, yeah, that is exactly what they have in mind for
you. Well, think about it.
Yes.
All laws, once they're in place, even if the background picture changes, the law's in place. If they're saying it's global warming now, and they get these laws enacted, and it takes two-thirds of Congress to change a law and reverse a law, it doesn't take that many to vote it in, just a majority. Once these laws are in place and people are making money off of it, I see a lot of reason for them keeping it in place, even if things start cooling off.
Yes.
Scenario presented.
And that's one of the things. When you listen to this and we're talking here about cooling instead of a heating, of course, that completely contradicts what they've told us to expect with global warming. And that's another part of the puzzle here, because there really isn't any reason to think that we are going to be going into global warming.
Unless there's a profit. unless you can convince companies to buy carbon credits where they supposedly plant forests halfway across the world in South America, which are never policed, watched after, or verified, so they can continue polluting in Poland or Germany or anywhere else. So there's the net effect is there is a net zero effect that Gore is looking for. Unfortunately, the net zero is the fact of effectiveness. If you end up letting these polluters just keep polluting with this phony scam of selling them property that supposedly is sinking carbon, which is not, then you're just you're funding things to get worse.
That's right. And that's one of the, I think, shocks that, you know, I'd like you to say something about, Augustus, because here's something where they've taken all the things that we thought we were working for to make the world a better place, and they've looked at it, and they've filed off the serial numbers, and they're simply going to recalibrate it to destroy us.
Well, you know, there's a lot of agendas going on, as I'm sure you're probably aware. And most of these people aren't sitting around snickering, rubbing their hands together about how clever little dirty people they are. They all really are committed to these ideologies. You know, I doubt that Maurice Strong or Al Gore sits around cleverly thinking about how they're duping everybody. I think they're probably in a mindset where the ends justify the means, and if this is all it takes to reduce population numbers on this planet and save Gaia, then, you know, they're doing good for the future of the planet. Well, I live on the planet. And believe it or not, I, with everyone else listening, I hope, considers my experience and their experiences very, very important, and that I shouldn't die for the planet, but neither should the planet die for me.
Mm-hmm.
But to paint an organization as though we are killing something that really cannot be killed is disingenuous and outright dishonest, really.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we're really talking about here is the thing that was presented as a way to privatize the right to pollute, and that's carbon credits. They're commodifying it.
That's completely right. And you have to remember when the airplane hit the North Tower. Was it North Tower or the South Tower? One of the towers had, I think it was North Tower, first plane hit, was Cantor Fitzgerald CO2E, which was the brokerage in carbon. And this idea, and they had already deemed it unworkable and unreliable, and they lost all their employees on one day. But magically, all the corporate heads were off on a boating trip out in the Hudson, which had to turn around because of very bad weather. Well, I remember 9/11, and it seemed to be a strikingly blue, clear, sunny day. 48 hours later, those directors were operating another carbon trading operation in New Jersey. Full in operation, but this time connected to Canadian private equity groups, the
mm-hmm.
Carlyle Group, and other ownership. So there's a big problem going on with global carbon. There's a big association with Strong, Maurice Strong, and the UN that seems inherently incorrect and, if not, outright corrupt.
Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about who Maurice Strong actually is? Because some of them may only barely be aware of him because of his association with Food for Oil.
Well, actually, you know, I think maybe you'd be better at that, because I think you've done a bit more reading on Maurice than I have. I do know that he is the darling of the UN and Boutros Ghali and did all kinds of bad things in Rwanda with Hutus and Tutsis. But feel free to elucidate the audience.
Well, the thing that you need to remember about Maurice Strong is that he was a dropout from Canada who was solicited by petroleum companies to become, quote-unquote, active in organizing the original UN. And the UN at that point was a fairly easily understood organization. It was very clear. The lines of cooperation were clear and easily understood. Now, if you walk into the UN today, one of the things you find out is unless you are very aware and you've made a study of it, it's difficult to understand it well enough so that you can actually operate there. And one of the things that you will do with any organization, if you want to obfuscate the issue and make it impossible for people to use it, is you will take a look at how you can make it more complex, which is exactly where they went with this. If you follow out the chains of causality that follow Maurice Strong through time, what you're going to find is that he has done everything he can to make the world a more complex place, make it more difficult to see what is actually going on, and to hold anybody, especially him, accountable. Because even though now many of us are aware that he had something to do with Food for Oil, those billions of dollars are still completely missing. And there has been no accountability.
He was given $1 million in brown paper bags delivered by agents of Bank Paribas from France, who brokered the deal and did the revolving credit out, in and out of their bank in France with J.P. Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this was illegal, according to Canadian law, but, of course, Maurice was never brought up on any charges on such behavior.
That's exactly right. And this is the theme that you see played over and over and over again with these people on so many different issues. Eventually, it is simply mind-boggling.
Oh, absolutely.
And in coming up with this this carbon credit thing, what they're doing is taking something that's so hard for people to understand in the first place, and they are divorcing it from any sense of being able to get a sense of what's really going on, and they will effectively be able to take your house using bogus science.
Well, let me state it clearly how they're going to do this and how they probably are doing this. McDonald Dittweiler and several corporations have an agreement with the Canadian government for data that comes out of the RADARSAT satellite. At this time, they really are the premier resource monitoring satellite system that has mapped the entire surface of this planet in three dimensions. It can identify by frequency any kind of rock, mineral, plant, anything on the surface, or how much glaciers you have on the surface or not. What I believe they're doing is they're modifying the data. They're adjusting the data to support the argument. Because they have a monopoly on the data, no one gets to see it before they mess with it.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, they can say anything. Now, by using phony data, they can come into a court of law and just say, this satellite system, this well-respected satellite system, shows these results when all you're seeing is digital bits of an image on an image. And those digital bits can be played with in Adobe Photoshop. So the digital image of a highly expensive satellite system, the data quality is always suspect because the data is a digital image and the data can be modified in the computer, which certainly serves the purposes of a group of people trying to force this idea that, well, only if you pay these taxes and your carbon footprint taxes and your carbon assessment taxes and.
So
these guys signed the Western Climate Agreement,
mm-hmm.
which was the Western Regional Climate Action Initiative back in February this year, I sometimes wonder if they knew what they were really opening everybody up for. Because it's like all these things. You start out with a great idea. Wouldn't it be nice if we could, assuming man-made carbon is the problem, it's actually the pollution from burning all these things, which obviously isn't going to stop because you can buy credits to keep burning it, okay?
Right.
Not only the carbon, it's the aromatic hydrocarbons, the polyphenols, the stuff in the atmosphere that really causes the cancers and all the weird stuff when it gets in us and doesn't get out of us. Carbon is important. It's how we eat. It's how we grow plants.
Yes.
We're in a carbon cycle with all the other life force on this planet. Carbon is good. It's the other things the polluters are making that are bad. And I know my buddy Dana, you know, Rohrabacher, I know you and I are on different sides of the aisle and arguing his case in Congress, different cases, but he says it's not global warming, it's global pollution. And I agree. You know, the problem right now is not global warming. That's a celestial solar effect between the Earth and the sun, depending on solar activities and the synthesis of elements in the sun due to its age and its collapsing pressures, and the release of energy, which brightens the sun and causes increases in solar brightening, which is, of course, the way to map the real global warming issue as a solar radiance increase, which has been detected and proven.
Yeah. Now, in the skit we just did,
yeah.
The thing that tripped up this couple is that somebody had used their fireplace.
Right.
And if you think about that, that's nobody thinks about that now. Think about not being able to use your fireplace.
Yeah.
But that does, because it does create carbon, and it's something that in time, you know, forever, people have used their fireplace as a way to stay warm. And so what this is also doing is forcing people to move to a different technology that they may not have access to.
Well, actually, there's a lot of technologies out there, and you and I have been talking in sidebar conversations about organizing these systems. And quite frankly, it would be very easy to decentralize the distribution of power generation and water and communication and get it out of the hands of people that like to police and monitor and filter. Put it back in smaller groups so they can sort of police themselves, somewhat of an oversight, but not the way it is now. There are For instance, in the San Joaquin Valley, we have a big problem with the cattle farms dumping all this urine and feces and all these things into the ground and polluting the groundwater, especially with all the biological things and antibiotics and things they feed the cattle. That goes in. Those molecules don't get break down. They stay in the groundwater.
Well, that's a scary thought.
Well, no, it's a real issue. And there are technologies out there, one of which I've been working on, which does 25,000 gallons a day of just pure sewage water, converts it into 25,000 gallons of potable drinking water.
So you would actually be able to take your water that had come out of your septic system, process it, and then recycle it for drinking water.
Yeah, it's just distilled water.
Now, how much would that cost?
Oh, I don't have any prices on that, but it's certainly very cheap, probably only cents on the, pennies on the gallon over time. And that, but the point being, these farms, these big cattle farms,
mm-hmm.
instead of running the urine into the ground, they could run them into troughs, collect it, process it, and give it back to the cattle as pure drinking water, and reduce the amount of water going out of the aquifers into the ground as waste.
Mm-hmm.
Refine the waste. There's probably chemicals in the waste that are worthwhile in the chemistry industry, I would suspect. And or just break it down into elemental materials to build other things with. But the whole idea of waste management and recycling is still in its infancy in my mind. It really hasn't gotten to the point of really addressing the amount of garbage that we create every year.
Which is huge.
Like pyramids on the shores of Peru, the way they used to do it. They used to build these huacas, these huge pyramids of garbage. And they just lay more dirt on top and another layer and more garbage and more dirt on top and another layer. It's just like the ones in Arvin. I mean, if you go down Laval Road in Arvin, Wheeler Ridge, you'll see these great big landfills, which are a great big square, filling up to, I suppose, maybe the next 50, 60 years of a large pyramid of garbage, just like they had in Peru.
Mm-hmm.
And the conquistadors came in.
Yes, and of course that's great for the archaeologists later on, but it's horrifying for the people who have to live near it.
Well, that and the other side out there, that somebody at one point delivered pounds and pounds of radioactive thorium. So that's over at a site next to the Arvin landfill, and you got these radioactive materials in the groundwater out there. And people are growing plants and selling groceries and selling fruits and vegetables in the grocery stores.
That's a scary thought.
You're safe. Don't buy that Geiger counter, but go ahead and eat that fruit.
Not actually very funny, but very, very scary. Let's get back to the you're giving them a lot more credit than I give them, because you're looking at this and say, well, maybe they don't really understand what they're doing. But is there really a case for them not really understanding what they're doing here, do you think?
They know fully what they're understanding. They fully understand what they're doing. I mean, it's perfectly obvious. They've said it in many meetings and many statements that, barring cooperation, that all kinds of things could be enacted to reduce the number of humans on this planet. Morty Strong has lots of quotes saying those very things. These guys are utopian elitists, I guess is a good way to point at it, because they want the utopia, but they want to be the elite in the utopia after it's been enacted. I don't think any of them want to live in the hunter-gatherer community that they would like to see us all enter into to save beautiful Gaia, while, of course, they rule beautiful Gaia,
Yes, I don't actually think that we're going to have much of a role except fertilizer.
Well, like I said, human beings have an amazing ability to adapt. And because there's 5 billion of us, odds are somewhere in that bell curve distribution of genetic, variation, you will have survivors almost no matter what happens. Even barring losing our atmosphere, there will be some humans that will survive. And this planet will not die. This planet's been here with life on it for about 4 billion years. So if you look at that as a timeline, like a street from here to New York, the last quarter inch in that street from here to New York is everything man has done and recorded in the past 9,000 years. So there's a whole lot of life left in this planet. Whether we're on it or not is another question. But
yeah, that certainly is a question.
Die. So this whole argument of we're killing the planet. No, that's a very erroneous argument. We are polluting the planet and making it hard for us to live here, but we're not killing this planet.
Mm-hmm. It'll just readjust itself enough so that we aren't there anymore.
Well, there's other things that happen in the solar system that people probably are not aware of. The solar flares we hear about all the time, and sometimes we get bright auroras, and sometimes it closes down the Canadian grid. but like back in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
and that was 10 days.
Well, 130 years ago, it took down all the transmission lines for telegraph all over the globe. A huge one hit. And the one
that was 1848?
47 or 48, 47. Yeah. And it turns out that the reason we found this out is these two astronomers in England recorded a bright solar flare that was what was coincidental to happening 19 hours before the telegraph lines burst into flames.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about the time it takes for solar particles traveling at, 500 or 600 kilometers per second, solar protons and electrons, to reach the atmosphere at a strong enough Gaussian potential to just burst through it and reach the surface and be inducted into, telephone and telegraph lines.
Now, what part of the world did that actually impact? Was
the United
States, world?
China, Europe, it was all over the place. And it lasted for a little while as the Earth turned towards the direction of the particle flow. And as the flare passed, it all died down. But, of course, most of the telegraph lines had burned at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this is when all we had was telegraph lines. Not TV stations, cell phones, cars, toasters, microwaves, all the stuff that will induct electrical potential and ignite. So, I keep telling people, it's fine, global warming, global warming. Well, that global flare, the solar flare is the big deal.
And one of the things that seems to be happening from what you have just said and outlined is that even though these people know that this is the objective science that's involved and these are the real security risks that face us today, these are exactly the things that they are completely indifferent to seeing us protected against, though we can assume that they're doing everything they can to protect themselves.
Well, one of the things they've done to protect themselves is to create the World Conservation Bank, which I mentioned in our little radio play there.
Yes.
And what this is it's a debt for equity swap. These governments owe their banks a lot of money to keep the government going. And these are loans that are unsecured. So somehow Maurice Strong and his little buddies in the UN have decided to somehow convince governments of the world to sign over their heritage forests and unpopulated lands in a land trust so that, to secure the loans and to have this legacy for all mankind, right?
It sounds so lovely.
Well, unless you lose your house to carbon credit violations, which are phonied up to let you lose your house, then that goes into the World Conservation Bank, and you're either a renter or out on the street.
Mm-hmm.
The idea here is to over time, progressively, reduce the number of people in private ownership,
mm-hmm.
and increase the number of people renting. In a sense, it's what they've done with the utilities. We don't own the utilities. We merely rent the use of the utilities.
That's right.
But we still own our houses every now and then, but even that's going away, so that you'll only be able to rent the place you live, rent the electricity you use, rent the water you buy. All in all, when you look at what you're doing, it's not really ownership, and it's getting towards the point of, in fact, indentured servitude.
Mm-hmm.
And,
which is,
again,
of course,
these huge consolidated industries that somehow don't look as though they're monopolies do this daily.
And they're monetizing this. The things like the Chicago Climate Exchange are intended to do exactly that.
Well, that's what it's designed to do, is to be a clearinghouse for satellite data to probably work programs to take people and move them off their property.
Mm-hmm.
A very long and slow but concerted advance towards those ends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think Al Gore and Maurice Strong and Paul Desmarais and some of the bankers and, big numbers and big names on this planet are doing. They may think it's the best thing ever thought of because they'll be in control of it.
And how long do you think this has been going on? I mean, we know...
Probably 300 or 400 years. I mean, if you look at the way banks have come into power in their own, organized banking, and the way that you see wars being fought throughout history, and generally the banks are mostly untouched, It's like somehow this huge revolution runs through Russia, but they still got those banks. Banks are okay. It's funny how the money seems to rise above the events of human interaction.
Well, that's exactly true. They do, and that's certainly one of the reasons Switzerland, even though, of course, they're very well prepared anyway, they have a good system that way, one of the reasons nobody's going to invade them is that's where everybody keeps their money.
Again, the banks are always safe. The money will always be safe because at the end of the day, or the end of the era, you have to be able to pay your armies to maintain your control. So you're not going to mess with anything that's going to take away your ability, which is cash or something, to maintain you know, ownership of the control system.
And you can see why they would do it that way. You can see why that makes perfect sense from their perspective. But one of the things I think that we now have the opportunity to look at here is to understand, because now we can see a chain of causality taking place that before was obscured to us.
Well, by the same token, it's going to require the basic populace, the basic person in our society, to acknowledge this and just say, you know what? It's been fun laying back, watching my plasma TV and getting, you know, high and drunk, but really what I need to do is get educated, get to a situation where it's a little stronger out there because, you know, I'm raising myself and those around me in education so that these little games can't be played so easily.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe you can go back to relaxing again. But every now and then you got to, you know, get up and shovel the mud off your front yard from the flood of badness that happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, and of course, that's one of the reasons to go to a decentralized economy and a decentralized form of organization.
Well, we've discussed this, and we're still in an argument about this, that's fine, assuming that the rest of the world decides to play nice, too. So there are details of that. Ideally, it's a great idea, and I support it. Practically, I see many roadblocks to achieving it, but I still want to achieve it. So.
Yes. And that's, I'm sure that we all want pretty much the same thing. We want security for everybody. We want safety. We want prosperity. And I think a lot of us really, really want to go back and focus on a system where, you know, we get into the things that really matter. And the things that really matter for almost all of us are relationships.
Well, for some of us, that's true. I mean,
it's not for everybody, certainly for most people.
As a social being, it has our relationships that gives us the support to create and maintain a society in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true.
So I guess it's the quality of those support systems, and since they're people, it would be good to have an educated mass of people, I would think.
It very much would be a good thing to have an educated group of people who we could rely on to absolutely do the right thing in the clinch.
Well, again, ignorance is no excuse in a lot of situations.
Well, ignorance, it doesn't matter whether or not it's an excuse. Ignorance can kill you.
Oh, yes, it can.
So, you know, I think that there's kind of a different issue there. You know, when you see what the right thing is and you can make it happen, then that's real protection. That evokes real change. So we've talked about Maurice Strong a little bit. We've talked about the Chicago Climate Exchange, which is actually something like a stock exchange so that people can buy credits so that they can actually pollute. We've talked about a little bit, a tiny bit, we've touched on the idea of privatization versus corporatization so that what you had was the use of the word that was privatization that was used originally in the 70s and early 80s to talk about allowing, you know, taking the power back to the individual. And then you see that go through the think tanks and come out in Congress instead as something that actually centralizes the power and hands it over to the corporations, which is sort of astonishing. Which takes us on to another point that I think is kind of interesting, which is the steady process by which this has taken place. And, you know, that process and what to do about it and helping people recognize it, of course, is one of the reasons that you're here, so we can talk about what people can individually do to be able to sort of educate themselves and the people around them. And you've done a lot. You've done a lot of writing on this issue, right?
No, of course.
And where can people go to find things that you have written on this issue?
Well, most of what I've been writing is the issue of food nutrition. You know, my chosen path of social change has been to improve the nutritional value in food, to reduce the amount of supplements and medicines you have to take because the food's making you healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that respect, most of my writing recently has been supporting the micro-mineral nutrients that I, you know, use in this plant minerals that I sell.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, this, you know, our lands have been stripped. We have continually placed nitrogen, potassium, phosphorus amounts, and large amounts of these three fertilizer minerals on our soils for the past 50 or 60 years without returning the 13 or 14 other micronutrients, you know, manganese, copper, zinc, selenium, all those things that are necessary for building nutrition in food, not just building structure, which is what NPK does. And as we continually just use these huge amounts of NPK, more and more and more, because we're getting it's getting harder and harder to produce the food, you strip it, you know, much out until it's basically just empty. And then you're just growing food with these big, these chemicals. And, of course, if you're using that, you have to start using pesticides because the plants are not going to stay healthy if they don't get the minerals and vitamins they need to make with the micro-minerals to stay healthy, and then they become susceptible to disease and insects.
Mm-hmm.
And you start pouring on the pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, all the other sides. And the only other side they haven't thought of is the fact that what you've really done is you've killed your micronutrients, your micro-minerals in the soil,
mm-hmm.
and your microorganisms. So the way to solve a lot of the issues with health care, health management, health in general, is to return food to the society that actually nourishes them.
Mm-hmm.
We have come up with a 14-component micromineral mineral solution that you put on soil, and when you use it, you actually use less of the NPK because once it's in balance, you know, the organisms love it, the plants love it, and we need the same minerals because we're in a synergistic relationship with all levels and all size frames of life as it emanates from this on this planet, much like the Suke and the Platonic ideas of the four levels of existence.
Mm-hmm.
As it is above, as it is below, which is what we get from our most ancient parts of the Akkadian and Hebrew. The same minerals the microorganisms need, the same minerals the plants need, same minerals the plants need, same minerals the animals need, we need, and it's just this thing that happens on Earth. That's not being done. So my company was started to sell this product that can remineralize your soil and put a little green cross sign on your land that shows that that's been remineralized. And over time, we hope that all the farms in America have little green crosses on them. Because we've done our job. We've brought the nutrition back by putting the minerals back in. The plants are able to go to the grocery store bigger, prettier, taste better, smell better, and do good to you. And the aisles full of medicines and liniments and all this other jazz start reducing in size.
Let's go to that theme for a moment, because I think that's really interesting. What you're talking about is actually simplifying people's lives. So instead of big pharma,
you plant more plants. The plants are going to use more carbon, right?
Right. So that's a real fix for that too, right there. We don't need to tax it. All we need to do, you know, or fine people for it. We just get them to plant more and use the plant food.
Well, yeah.
And
you know what? I've noticed this in my life when I got away from working for corporations, you know, on a regular basis.
Uh-huh.
And I started being able to live at my ranch and live at my property stuff and got into gardening. You spend a lot of time gardening. It's very fulfilling. And you grow stuff you can eat. And you start forgetting about all these addictions you have to driving to the store real fast or having a flashy car or, you know, going to shop all the time. Or you start getting more satisfied with living instead of the things that you think you have to buy to be more comfortable living.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an interesting reflection. Of course, I'm 57, not 20 or 30, enjoying the the fruits of a very vigorous and vibrant society. I mean, when I was that age, I did it too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just getting older, you know.
Yeah, you just getting old. So tell me, I think everybody's going to be interested, what was it that turned you from where you were and took you where you are?
Oh, I don't know, probably having my daughter, you know. That usually changes most men, at least it should.
Well, it should. But for you, it obviously had a huge impact.
Well, you know, I just, it's not one thing. You know, my whole life has been a continuous series of educations and re-educations, of learning and relearning things to make sure I didn't learn the wrong thing. And I always learn new things. Right now, for instance, my big thing is learning Spanish. I really want to learn Spanish. I want to communicate to more people in the state. And it's actually a very beautiful language. And I've heard it spoken by you know, people that really speak it well that aren't native, you know, Mexican or Spanish. And or Latin American, should I say.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that, you know, this is a huge untapped resource that's not only kept out by some crazy border ideas and the south of the country. But the language border, you know, that Tower of Babel thing, you know, if you can't communicate, all sorts of misconceptions start happening. And, I mean, I want to know what people are thinking. So I've decided at this date to start learning some other languages. I'm going to probably learn Spanish and French, so I can speak to some of my Canadian friends, and I can speak to some of my Mexican friends, of which I have a lot.
And you said that you actually grow your own vegetables, or at least some of them, using the plant food that you actually produced, that you created.
Yeah. It grows plants easier, bigger, less fertilizer.
How do they taste?
Great. I mean, that's the point. You know, a person had strawberries last year, they said, does this stuff work on my strawberries? I mean, what do you mean? We'll grow them? He goes, no, they make them taste like strawberries again. And I go, well, it does for mine. Why don't you try it? So I gave them some to use. And, you know, they said, yeah. In fact, some of the strawberries, this is out in Maine, some of the strawberries are still producing strawberries, and it's like frosting out there.
Wow.
So it's like, okay, this makes the plant pretty strong.
Taste when it really tastes like a strawberry?
Yeah, well, it tastes, you know, very sweet and tart and citrusy and...
Has more character?
It tastes, it's redder, which would mean there's more anthocyanins, which are the sugar protein links that happen in the stems and get pumped up into the leaves. Why we have red and orange leaves in fall is from the carotenoids, like the vitamin A's, the carrots and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Those are the oranges and yellows, and the anthocyanins are the reds and purples. You know, the chlorophylls are the green colors.
Mm-hmm.
But the chlorophyll dies out and goes back into the stems. The other colors that are in the leaf come forth. And I noticed that my strawberries have, like, sugar maple colors on them this year, which means you've got more of these compounds in the leaf, which means more sugars were made, which is probably why they're sweeter. And I see a direct connection between the micronutrient content and the photosynthetic process inside the chloroplast to construct these very difficult-to-construct molecules.
Mm-hmm.
They're very easy to construct if you have the appropriate minerals at hand. So, you know, if I'm right, and I think I am, I wouldn't be doing it otherwise, that within, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, after the big solar event and the big destruction of Earth...
right.
You know, whatever. But, in that amount of time, nutrition could be brought back to our fields and our plants and our backyards and our gardens and our... And this country could start taking the direction of an agricultural society, which is what Jefferson and those guys were thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that our entanglement should not be deep entanglements with other governments. These entangled alliances are bad things, and we're seeing that now in all these James Bond relationships we have with other countries.
Yeah, they're horrifying and disgusting.
It's childish is what it is.
Could you give everybody, again, the name of where they can go, your site for getting your plant food?
Oh, sure. It's very simple, asaporganics.com. One word, like the acronym ASAP, and the word organics.com.
Well, thank you so much for being with us tonight, Augustus. It's been fantastic again.
Yeah.
And you, God bless you. Have a great weekend and a great Halloween.
Bless you too, Melinda. Have a very great day.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Good night. And that's our show for today, Friday, October 26, 2007. All of us need the truth. Without that, we can't prepare for whatever it is that's coming. On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is and will always be America's mission statement. This is where we want to go today. It was where we wanted to go in 1775. It's up to us, each of us, to ensure we reach the destination. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object, evidences it designed to reduce them under absolute despotism. It is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom. And may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.